Where do I start? How do I train recall? How long should we work on healing before moving on? Is crate training really that important? We hear these questions all the time, and there's one answer that will help with all of them. The complete step-by-step dog training course found at Standing Stone Supply. They break down the what, when, where, and how to train your own dog from 8 weeks to 1 year old. They've got it all laid out for you, down to even the daily activity checklist to keep you and your puppy on track. Check out standingstonesupply.com and remember to use code GDIY to save 10%. Being an upland hunter in the South nowadays unfortunately means a lot of travel to try and find birds for my dogs. This means it's even more important that my map scouting is reliable to justify the effort. This is where Onyx comes in. I can honestly say that Onyx directly impacts the level of success I find on my trips. Whether it's the private versus public land boundaries, the expanding number of unique layers and features by state, or the 3D mapping capabilities, my initial step in planning my hunting trip starts with Onyx. To know where you're going, you have to first know where you stand. Check out Onyx Hunt Maps and use code GDIY20 at checkout to save 20%. GDIY has partnered with the Bird Dog Society to do monthly bonus check-ins to discuss and announce any news and events that may be of interest for any and all bird dog owners and trainers. There are a lot of factors that impact us as we try to train, hunt, and just live with our dogs. So it is important to recognize the resources we utilize are maintained, improved, and people actually know about them. Please check out the links in the show notes that can direct you where to get involved and show your support. All right, everybody, welcome back to another Bird Dog Society update presented by Standing Stone Supply. Joined with me is my buddy Jim Burris. Jim, how you doing, man?
Doing great. How are you, Nick?
I live in the dream as always. I can't complain. And man, it's that weird time of year to where we're recording this. It's like at the end of May, early June. It's hard to believe that we're already a halfway through the year. And then conversely, by extension, hunting season is like 3 months away. I mean, it's ridiculous how close and how fast it went by.
Yeah, I'd imagine right now your dreams that you're living are all about this fall. So
it is. I'm really picking up the pace on trying to figure out where I'm going and what I'm chasing. What about you? Are you already kind of planning your trips out? I know we've had a few texts back and forth. Is your calendar filling up yet?
There in September we're going to do the trip to Colorado for the ptarmigan and bluegrass. So yep. That's going to be really cool. I gotta lose a few pounds before I head out that way.
Those mountains are a little little evil out there, from my understanding. Yeah,
and then come back for a few weeks and have the Bird Dog Society workshop there in September. And then once the requirements for that are done, then I'm going to head out to South Dakota and chase some sharptails and some prairie chickens. In November, I'm going to go do a little bit of grouse hunting up in West Virginia, along with some deer and bear hunting. So it's kind of a mixed bag trip. Yep. And then, of course, we have our woodcock season that comes in here in December. And so those are kind of the big dates that I'm looking for in about every month. So,
what kind of guy are you when you start planning your trips? Are you kind of I know what I get here. I've been there, done that. I like going back to a place I've been. Or do you like chasing new birds and new places, or kind of a mixture of both, I guess?
Well, I would say I'm a mixture of both. I definitely like to chase new birds and new places. But I kind of like to have a rotation where I get four or five good places. And then, every 4 or 5 years, you just kind of rotate around.
Yeah.
That, gives you a good mix of birds and stuff like that. And last year we hunted the national grasslands out in South Dakota, which was really great. But unfortunately, my dog Manu got a leg injury literally the day before we were set to leave. And so he was on painkillers and anti-inflammatories the whole week he was in South Dakota. And then his leg finally got a little bit better there towards the end of the week. I got him out of the truck on the last day that we were there hunting, and he got hit in the face by a skunk literally within an hour of getting out of the truck. So he had a really rough week, and he never got a bird in his mouth the whole week because of all the circumstances going on. And so I'm heading back to South Dakota. This year is more of a revenge for Manu, because I really want to shoot prairie chicken over one of his points, because that's a bird that he still has on his list. I kind of keep a list of my own and a list for my bird dogs.
yeah
So, but we were really, I was originally planning on going to the Bighorn Mountains out in Wyoming this year, but I think I'm going to push that back till next year.
So. Yeah. Yeah. I'm a chucker chasing, I'm assuming.
Really kind of out there. Well, of course, you got chucker, but if you go to the west of the mountains, you got sage grouse. So if you go in September, you got blue grouse, you got sharp tails, you got, you know, pheasant, you know, there's a, you got huns out there too. So, I mean, there's just a lot of diversity that you can get in the bighorns, blue grouse and rough grouse. And,
yeah. So. Well, and like you said, you know, we're headed to Colorado in mid-September. That, you know, that's, man, I don't know what the heck to expect out of that, because I know very little about blue grouse and ptarmigan, but it'll be fun checking something new. But I'm trying to figure out where I'm going after that, and I've been kind of knocking around the idea of Wyoming myself, shooting up north, maybe go back to Montana or something like that. But you know me, man, it's hard for me to do something that I did last year, or even the 2 years before. I'm always wondering what else is out there. And I really think if I was able to just focus in on something that I really particularly enjoyed, I would be a much better hunter. But it's just too hard for me to do that right now. There's too many birds to chase, too much new ground to cover.
Well, I think with hunting, it's all problem solving. You got to figure out, you know, how you need to approach the bird and how the dog needs to handle stuff. So the more diversity you throw in there, you become a better hunter. And, you know, eventually you're going to start coming back around the places you've been before. And, you know, all that experience is going to culminate into, you know, a better hunter. So.
Exactly. And that's what I'm hoping, man. That's what I keep telling myself is by the end of all this, when it's time to settle down, I'll be a better hunter. I tell everybody I'm a generalist, you know, jack of all trades, master of none. But there's a time and a place for a specialist. You know, the seems like every single year I do end back up in the Northwoods at some point chasing rough grouse. You know, that's kind of the staple or the commonality between all my seasons is at some point I'm up there. So I'm assuming that's probably going to be what I specialize in, quote unquote, in the future. But for right now, man, it's just what's around the corner. Let's go over that mountain and see what's over there.
Yeah, I'm more of an opportunist. If it's around and I can hunt it and Manu likes to hunt it, then we're going to go after it.
Yeah. So. Well, what are you getting into right now? Getting Manu prepared? Are you just keeping them in shape? Are you working towards something? Are you have any tests coming up this year? What?
Well, no, I haven't scheduled them for any tests. We may run UT this fall. I'm not sure. Fall tests are kind of, you know, for me, kind of a secondary, just because I'm usually so focused on hunting. But right now it's just keeping Manu primed and making sure he's in good condition for hunting season. The one thing I was working on with him was you know, kind of patience whenever he can see the bird. Because he would have a tendency to kind of creep or even bust point if you can see the bird, especially if you got one of those birds that was there just, you know, taunting him or something like that. So I've been working with him a little bit on that. And he was already a pretty steady dog, so it didn't take a whole lot of work, but had him out the other day and did a little bit of pigeon work and stuff with him, and just kind of worked on that, stop the flush and stop the shot and steadiness in the sight of the birds and stuff like that. And he did really well. So I'm kind of optimistic that, you know, this year is going to be a good year, and especially on those snipe, you know, whenever they start popping up, it's good to have a steady dog so you don't have to worry about the dog chasing after birds, and then you get more shot opportunities and stuff when you have a dog steady through wing shot fall. So,
dude, you I don't know, you may or may not be surprised at how often I get asked about snipe now from the pod. it comes up quite a bit, and it's mostly people that live in areas that don't have the typical bird opportunities, as we've talked about numerous times. But let me ask you, what are you doing? Like, what's your process or thought process or setup for working Manu on sighted birds? You know, are you just walking them into it and real quick on the whoa, or are you giving them the opportunity to develop, or are you whoaing them and then getting the bird out in front of them? Like, you know, walk me through it, because that's a setup that a lot of people, you know, want to work on, but they're kind of unclear on how to set it up to where it's kind of a real authentic hunting scenario, if that makes sense.
Yeah, so it can be a little bit of a challenge. But, you know, one thing that I was thinking a lot of times in the test, you know, you have planted birds and those birds get up, start walking around and stuff like that. And, you know, a lot of times, if particularly with a younger dog or a dog that has a lot of drive, then, you know, that can kind of get them all wound up and start to break and stuff like that. So not only for a hunting point, you know, from a testing aspect, it's good. But a few things that I've been doing is you can take a winged bird and put it in a launcher. Now, when they go on point, you can actually launch it, and then you don't shoot the bird, but let the bird get back down on the ground, and then make them stay steady throughout that whole process. Another thing is place boards. So you can use a place board or no place board. You can just give them a whoa command. And, you know, the other day I literally was setting out pigeons, and they were walking around right in front of them, you know, within a few feet. And that's just to teach them, you know, that, you know, in the presence of a bird, you still have to stay, you know, mentally sharp and under control. And so those are a few things that I've been working on him with, and he's been doing really good with that. You know, because if you think about it, whenever a dog learns whoa, there's all kinds of different things that, you know, constitute a command. Say, hey, you know, Manu and I don't use whoa. We use stay, just because that's the easiest word, you know, for the rest of my family to use. But regardless, you know, when a bird gets up, you know, that's a command, whoa. When a gun gets shot, that's a command, whoa. You know, when you say whoa, that's a command, whoa. I have a whistle command for whoa. So there's all these different commands that, you know, in a hunting setting will mean stop and stay there until you're released. And I think that, you know, whenever you have a dog that, you know, has all these commands, it's particularly if you're hunting wild birds that like to popcorn flush and, or come out low and fast, you know, it's important from a safety standpoint, but also you get more shot opportunities whenever you have a dog that's steady and then understands, hey, whenever I hear a shot, I need to stop, or whenever I hear the wings, you know, a flush, I need to stop, or whenever I see a bird, I need to stop. And,
yeah,
you know, so all those are essentially commands, and so they need exposure to each of them. So
yeah, and I mean it goes beyond just testing. You know, it's probably the most common in a testing scenario, especially you go to a place like the Invitational where there's so many birds running around. It's like by the end of the trip, you know, you hear people just like, man, they're just running all over the place like rats. I have seen it in the actual hunting scenarios. Not very often, you know. They're wild birds. Usually, when they get up, they're going. But one bird, one grouse in particular, up in Maine, I still think of to where it was just it's like it never even knew what a dog or a human was, and it bowed up on me and was just, I mean, just talking trash to me. And I had Rachel on the ground, which you've been on the ground with Rachel, to where she's been through it. She's seen it. She's done it, whatever. She just sat there and held, and it took me forever to get that bird to even flush and shoot. So it's like you take a dog that can't take the sight of a bird picture like that, then more than likely they're busting it and you're not getting the opportunity. I think if Lucy was on the ground, more than likely she would have ripped it and I wouldn't have gotten the shot off on it. But that bird was also an idiot too. It was literally just looking at me just flat. I mean, Harold was like, what are you going to do? I'm like, I don't know. I can't get it to fly. I literally had to almost punt that thing to get it to fly, which is not the norm. But yeah, man, it's We could sit here and talk training and dogs all we want. Let's go ahead and get into the update and what news and all the new happenings that you guys kind of have going on over at Bird Dog Society. What's happened? What's good? What's coming down the pipe? All that fun stuff.
Yeah. So a few things. You know, we're really starting to kind of look forward to the next 2 years down the road and get things on the calendar. Our first year so far has been really successful, and we still got a few exciting things coming down the pipeline for this year. But, you know, we're starting to get webinars scheduled for 2024, and we're starting to think about events even all the way out to 2025. We're starting to fill out as far as an organization. We just recently approved a new North Carolina and Georgia ambassador for our ambassador program. So we're going to be getting them plugged in and hopefully get the ambassador program, you know, kind of running smoothly, and they can help us with a lot of the kind of local events and organizing things and talking with people on the ground and stuff like that to, you know, figure out how the Bird Dog Society can best serve bird dogs and their owners. Webinars, we're going to be adding those to the website here soon. We got to A couple confirmed for 2024. We're still looking to add another one for 2023. We have a shed hunt one coming up in February, and then we're going to be doing a blue-green algae webinar next summer as well. So those are a couple of the confirmed ones. We have a few others that we're working on that aren't confirmed yet. But then one of the things we're most excited about is a workshop that we have coming up in September. It's going to be September 30th at the Hoffman Field Trial Grounds, which is on the Sandhills Game Lands here in North Carolina. It's going to be a full day instructional workshop. We have three instructors talking about quail hunting, woodcock hunting, and waterfowl hunting. That'll include Grayson Geyer, which you just had on a few weeks ago.
Yeah,
he'll be the woodcock expert. We have Wes Everman, who'll be talking about quail hunting, and Garrett Frey, who will be talking about waterfowl hunting. You know, these are some of the most prolific hunters that we have in North Carolina, so they'll be speaking. And we're also partnering with North Carolina Wildlife Resources Commission, and they'll be they'll have someone there that'll be talking about the public lands that you can actually go hunt. You know, so we're going to teach you how to hunt, and he's going to show you where you can actually go and hunt, some of the regulations and some of the public resources that the North Carolina Wildlife Resources Commission offers. And also through that partnership, we're going to be adding we're trying to get a second day added onto the workshop. It's not going to be immediately after, but it'll be at the Hunter Education Complex here in Eberly, North Carolina, where once we teach you how to hunt, you know, what's the next thing that you need to learn how to do? If you can find that bird, then you need to know how to shoot that bird.
I was about to say, so, cook it.
well, you got to put the shooting before the cooking.
So, step two. I went to step three automatically.
So we're adding on a second day, and this is through partnership with the NCWRC, to where we actually take people out and introduce them to shooting sporting clays, ammo, guns provided, and lessons on how to shoot will be a part of that as well. So, you know, if you do part one, which is the instructional part on the hunting, then part two is kind of a natural transition. And that'll be in October. And that'll be paired with the workshop that we have going on in September. So we're really excited about that. And, you know, we're also excited about the continued relationship that we're getting built with the North Carolina Wildlife Resources Commission.
Yeah. And correct me if I'm wrong, but I mean, the long vision of this, hopefully we get to the point to where it's not just the North Carolina Game and Fish Commission that you guys have this with, but kind of those agencies within every state, to where you can guys start doing stuff like these workshops and really informative stuff, to where, hey, you may not know what to hunt or how to hunt it, but that's what we're going to teach you, as well as where to go, as well as how to shoot safely. That's pretty much what Bird Dog Society is about, is trying to teach the average handler how to actually get the most out of their bird dogs and take them in cool places and do fun stuff.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, I've always said, you know, we got to do a good job here in North Carolina before we can expect to do a good job elsewhere.
Yeah.
So that's why, you know, there's a lot of focus right now on getting these events and programs on the ground here in North Carolina. Because once we figure out how to make them successful here, it'll be a lot easier to transition them into other states. And something else we're doing is trying to build a virtual library of videos. So all of our webinars are recorded and provided online for Bird Dog Society members. So if they miss the live offering for the webinars, they can go online and log in with their member credentials and watch any of our webinars on demand as many times as they want. But we're also getting a videographer to record all of our workshop, and that'll also be included in the video archive that we are building. So by the end of the year, we expect to have 16-17 hours worth of instructional content available online.
Yeah, buddy, because we needed more stuff to take our attention on and put it back on bird dog stuff, right?
Yeah, so and so we're hoping that that's a great resource when people, you know, just need questions answered and stuff like that. It'll be, you know, a whole library where you can actually see videos and pictures and contents and see what kind of questions other people are asking and get answers from experts. Something else we're starting to put together, which we're really excited about, is we're starting to get the details put together for a bird dog trauma clinic And the first offering for that is going to be next year. And we're looking at the Richmond, Virginia area for that. So we're starting to expand out into other states a little bit. But that'll be kind of talking about how to treat traumatic injuries, you know, to where you can maybe stabilize your dog to get them to a vet, maybe save their lives. You know, if it, God forbid, there be some kind of large fall from a cliff or a gunshot injury or some kind of stick impaling your dog or anything, injuries like that. You know, a lot of people carry a basic first aid kit with them, but, you know, do they have the skills and things necessary to get their dog out of the woods and get them to the vet and potentially save their life? So we're going to be talking about that. And then snake bites and traps are also a big one. People, you know, get their dog in a conibear or a snare. If they've never encountered that before, they may not even know if the tools they have are capable of cutting through a snare, or they may not have the tools to release a conibear from a dog's throat.
Yeah.
So those are also life-saving skills. So it'll be a trauma clinic that, you know, essentially, if you think about it, is a clinic to make sure that you have those tools to save your dog's life if a problem does come up.
Yeah. And more importantly, how to use those tools. Cause I have the tools in my vest and I go educate myself every so often. And, you know, at least once a year I'm doing that, because if you don't use it, you lose it. And it's like right now, mm-hmm. I'm due for a refresher on a lot of the stuff in my first aid kit. You know, I have it, I have all the stuff that we preach about having, but If you don't read on it, if you don't look at it, you don't practice with it, it doesn't matter if you did a clinic, you know, in the last year or two. I guarantee you, you've forgotten mm-hmm. key details and steps and how to use this stuff. You know, it's that's a class that never gets old. And even if you've attended one in the past, go to another one. You know, this isn't training per se of how, you know, well, go learn how to train your dog to do another thing. I mean, that's important and cool and fun in of itself, but the first aid stuff, I don't think that you can ever get enough knowledge to really be able to be prepared for everything that can happen in the field with these dogs.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, it's so variable what can happen to these dogs. So to be prepared for everything is not necessarily possible. But there's also education that you can do to make sure that what you do have is going to be usable whenever the time comes.
Yeah.
You know, for one example, you know, you think about snares and conibears, you know, like we were just talking about, you know, you get a dog and puts his head in a 5-gallon bucket that has a 330 conibear on it. You know, you may be talking, you know, you got to get that dog out of there within minutes. And there also may be traumatic injury to that dog's windpipe. You know, so how do you address that? What's the best way to triage that and get your dog out of there? And then snares, you know, people, you know, think that they can easily cut through a snare with a pair of, with a multi-tool, and it may be possible to cut through it with a multi-tool, but a lot of the ones that I've owned, you're not going to cut through it with a snare. And then if you have a dog that struggles on a snare, that snare is going to be so tight on the neck, you may not be able to get the cutters under the cable in order to cut it.
Yeah.
So there's certain types of cutters, that will work, to free a dog from the snare, and others that won't. And so snare, you have a little bit more time, than a large conibear, but you know, still your snare is designed to kill game quickly and ethically.
Yeah.
So you still don't have a whole lot of time. And one great thing that you can do about snares, though, if they're in your area, a dog that's used to walking on leash without pulling, or used to be on a tie-out stake, a lot of times they feel that tension on their neck and they won't pull against the snare. So that's one reason why, you know, if you have tie out stakes and your dog just doesn't like them, but you hunt in an area that has trapping and snares and stuff like that, you know, put them on that tie out stake and let them get used to that tension on their neck so they understand that they can't get away. And with a snare, is going to be kind of the same thing. And with a snare, the harder they pull, the tighter it'll get, and the quicker it'll become a problem.
No, that's a very good point. One that I honestly can't recall hearing or knowing of myself. And then to your point, the multi-tools, I mean, how many hunters are you aware of that multi-tool is not only their emergency first aid or their trap, you know, tool to release that, but also that's what they use to clean fish, clean birds. It's, you know, they open it up and it's just like, man, you hadn't cleaned that joker in forever. And all of a sudden it's rusty and stuff. So, I mean, most of the multi-tools out there aren't capable of cutting through a snare or anything like that. Then just how rusty and old they are, it might have a lot of sentimental value. You've been hunting it with for 30, 40 years, but there's a reason why I have wire cutters in my pack in addition to my multi-tool. But, you know, that's all stuff that you'll go over on the workshop. Do you know who's going to be running that? Is that Mark up there in Virginia, I'm assuming?
So actually, Jay Brecky, he's going to be flying over here and, he'll be a big part of it. And, you know, I'm sure we'll have other people involved, but we don't have those people lined up yet. But Jay will be one of our points of contact for the trauma clinic.
Good deal. And everybody hears that name, stay tuned. You'll be hearing more from him here soon on the GDIY podcast. Jim, is there anything else? It sounds like, man, y'all are stretching out. Y'all are already kind of going for the fences here in 2025 and events like that, which is good. You know, you can't do an organization like this without long-term plans. What else is there to talk about today?
Well, I think that's it for today. There's a few other things that, you know, once confirmed that I think will be very exciting for the future. You know, some of those events in 2025, you know, that we're looking at, you know, take multiple years to plan. So we're definitely thinking long road and, you know, big impact with the Bird Dog Society. So we can definitely use people's support. If they haven't signed up for membership, definitely go to birddogsociety.org, get us a membership. Everything that you donate and contribute definitely is really needed and appreciated. So,
yeah. And as always, the links are down in the show notes. Jim, I enjoyed catching up with you, talking a little bit of training, and you know, we have an eye towards the hunting season already, but always fun to check in with you and hear what you guys have going on over at the Society. I guess I don't know if it's you or somebody else next month, but I'm sure we'll be back and figure out what other crazy things you've had added onto the schedule, because you guys don't stay dormant for too long. Y'all stay a little busy over there.
Well, we got to keep the momentum going. That's the only way we're going to grow and get better and have an impact. So,
for sure. Exactly. Well, appreciate your time, guys. If you're interested, hit the link in the show notes. At least sign up. If you're interested in becoming an ambassador, reach out by all means, and we appreciate you checking in.
Thanks, Nick. We really appreciate it.
Thank you for listening to GDIY. If you enjoy this podcast, please remember to take a moment to rate, review, and share with a friend. Also, be sure to follow us and our partners on Facebook and Instagram under Gundog It Yourself. If you really enjoy the podcast and would like to contribute even more to the future content, please check out our Patreon at patreon.com/Gundog It Yourself. Thanks again and happy hunting.
Everyone seems to have the same questions or concerns when they start trying to decide which kennel to purchase for their vehicle. Perhaps it's time to stop asking all the questions and just design the perfect setup that meets your exact needs. B-Pro Kennel specializes in designing and fabricating custom premier dog boxes handcrafted right here in the USA from high-grade, lightweight aluminum. They'll get you set up with the size dimensions, lighting, storage, battery boxes with solar charging, and anything else you can dream of. Stop stressing over buying the wrong setup just after replace it again in a year. Go ahead and check out bprokennels.com and get exactly what you want.
If you're considering changing your dog's food soon, then be sure to check out Eukanuba Pro Performance. Their science-backed formulas are designed to take your dog to the next level of performance. They also now have the new puppy formula to help your pup start strong and live active. When looking at all the different food options, remember Eukanuba to help power their ultimate performance.
Hey, what's going on, everybody? It's Bob from Lone Duck's Gun Dog Chronicles podcast. I hope you just enjoyed the episode you just listened to. And if you did, I think you'll enjoy hopping on ours. We've got professional retriever trainers and upland bird dog trainers from across the country and world sharing their tips and tricks and great stories to help you and your dog get ready for the season. We'll see you there.